Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. Today, I'm speaking with Patricia Fripp. Patricia is an award-winning professional keynote speaker, executive speech coach, sales presentation trainer, and author. She is known for her ability to simplify and demystify the process of designing and delivering powerful keynote speeches and sales presentations. Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers, Patricia.
Well, as someone who frequently speaks in a customized Wonder Woman costume, I think I'm extra thrilled to be with you.
Wonderful. Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little about your journey to success in public speaking?
Certainly, and I hope that my success is a model to show our listeners that it doesn't matter where you start. With speaking superpowers, you can end up anywhere you want to go. For example, I started as a hairstylist at 15 in England, came to America at 20, and at age 30, went in the business myself. I was San Francisco's number one men's hairstylist. And one of my friends said, Patricia, you need to take the Dale Carnegie course. And I took the Dale Carnegie sales course because I had a product distribution business, loved it. And that led me to the public speaking course. And then he said, now that you finish your speaking course, you need to join Toastmasters to continue your practice and development, which is very good advice. You cannot be a good speaker unless you speak. And the least expensive way to get started for mere mortals on their way to be superheroes of speaking is to probably join Toastmasters. At the same time, I started traveling nationwide for a hair product company doing demonstrations to hairstylists, and also part of that was management and motivation seminars for hairstylists. That was how I was using the skills. Many of my clients who were executives said, Patricia, oh, you're speaking, come speak to my Rotary Club, Kiwanis Club, Lions Club, Optimus Club. And out of those first three talks, people realized, oh, hey, if her staff cut hair as well as she speaks, it would be worth trying it out. So I used speaking to promote my hairstyling business. At the same time, out of those very first talks, people would say, well, what would you charge to say that to my group? And the first time, the Oakland appliance dealer said that, I said $50. Next time, I said $50 in travel time. And so the San Mateo school administrator has paid me $125. So having earned $175 as a speaker outside of hairstyling, now the hairstyling demonstrations paid me quite well for the time. I was a junkie, and with some of my friends from Dale Carnegie and Toastmasters, we went to the positive thinking rallies, and we bought all the books at seminars, and I heard about the National Speakers Association. So in 1977, at age 32, 2 years into my 10-year lease, I went to my first National Speakers Association convention thinking no one is going to want to talk to me. I only talk to Rotary Clubs and hairdressers. And two things happened. One, I realized this could be something I would like to do when my lease is up when I was 40. So if you think, I started hairdressing at 15, so at 40, I would have had 25 years behind a hairstyling chair. And modestly speaking, I demonstrated at all the popular shows. I'd had my haircuts in magazines. I'd build a successful business. And the secret is, as you know with anything, is once you're at the top, perhaps you want to look at something else you might do. And I didn't want to stand up for a living when I was 65. I was not ready emotionally or career-wise or financially to be a speaker too much earlier, because if you want to have super speaking powers to make a living, it's going to be a long-term goal. second thing that happened at that first convention, I got discovered by a big-time promoter who booked me to speak to 2,000 people on the same program with Dr. Robert Shuler, the minister from Garden Grove. So if you look at it that way, that was a pretty good start. And I went full-time as a professional speaker. I kept my hairstyling business and was still building my speaking business when I became the first woman president of the National Speakers Association in 1984. So at that point, I was already traveling at least 50% of my time speaking and still had the salon. So then I went full-time. Now, this is probably a long answer to your question. However, this hopefully shows people the logical step that you would go through. It is not overnight success. And then, and this is the secret in any business, you've got to listen to your customers. Now, in those days, going back to when the National Speakers Association was newer, and I was really one of a handful of women speakers that were fairly well known. People, for example, Mike Frank, who discovered me, my first mentor, had a speaker bureau, and he would actually say to clients, would you consider a woman? And in the late '80s, a lot of them would say no. Now, by the middle '80s, they said, we need a woman. Even if it was a male-dominated industry, they needed a woman to prove that we are modern thinking. Then by the time the 90s were here, it didn't make any difference. It was who had the right expertise or the right message for our meeting. And now it honestly doesn't make any difference. Man, woman, old, young. And this is an advantage about being in speaking or consulting or coaching or training business. Although in America we're very youth-oriented, there is a certain wisdom. You might have a few more wrinkles, which isn't helpful if you're in Hollywood. But it doesn't hurt when you're a consultant or speaker. Now, you have to keep it together and look attractive if you're going to go out in public. And I would be the first to say, I don't know that I look as good as I did 10 years ago. But anyway, to go back to, I listened to my clients, and this was a turning point. I was speaking for Aramark Foods, the division that sold the hospital. And after my keynote speech, the national sales manager came up and said, Patricia, I liked your speech, but I loved how you delivered. Could you teach our salespeople to speak this way? Because it takes us a year to be in a position to give an hour presentation to a hospital board. It's worth $9 million a year if we get the business. And we are losing sales, and it has nothing to do with our product or our pricing. It has to do with the presentation skills of our competitors are better than ours. So if that isn't a living example of a financial application to speaking superpowers, that was it. And little did I know that fast forward a few years, that would be a one way when the economy tanks a little, as it has done, and keynote speaking, because there are less meetings, has shrunk, that I have had more demand for my time and my expertise probably than ever before, even in my heyday when I was delivering 130 keynotes a year. So perhaps one speaking superpower might be one, you have to master itself, but then, as you said in my introduction, simplify it and demystify it to teach to other people. And when I coach and mentor other speakers, this is what I say. You get paid for what you know. You get paid well for delivering what you know exceptionally well. And then the third part of the formula is you get paid superbly well for what you know, delivering it well, and passing on those speaking superpowers to other people who might not be natural speakers or who read or never considered that their role is public speaking. And one last comment, then I'll pass it back to you. Is, as I frequently say to my audience, outside the privacy of your own home, all speaking is public speaking. There is no such thing as private speaking. Networking, reporting to your senior management, just walking, schmoozing with the chief financial officer in line in the cafeteria at work. These are all public speaking situations.
Very true. Now, given your unique history here, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something you were born able to do? And why do you believe that?
Speaking and theatrical or artistic talent, because all principles in one discipline are transferable and true for other disciplines. For me, it might be more natural to stand up in front of a group than other people. However, it is a learned practice going to be better than others. However, some people are going to rehearse and work at it harder than others. My brother is an internationally acclaimed rock and roll guitarist, Robert Fripp. Had a group, King Crimson, played on David Bowie's Heroes, collaborated with a lot of great stars. And according to Rolling Stone magazine, he is the 42nd best guitarist in the history of the world, living or dead. And as he says, he also is a very eloquent speaker. And he says he was born tone deaf with no sense of rhythm. A learned, practiced skill. My next door neighbor is a brilliant artist, and I said, Tana, were you a natural artist when you were a little girl? She said, yes. But I still had to go to school to learn the techniques, to learn how to do it.
I guess it's kind of like being a diamond. Pull a diamond out of the ground. It's not the beautiful diamond that you'd put on a ring.
That's exactly true.
It needs to be polished. So now, and I'm sure you can do this, imagine that you are a public speaking superhero. What do you believe would be your main superpowers?
My main superpower is, at this point in my life, to simplify and demystify what it takes to be able to teach people and identify their superpowers. So my clients, and some of my clients, and I work with a lot of salespeople, it might be engineers who are now CEOs. I certainly work with celebrity speakers and up-and-coming speakers, but I work with nuclear engineers and rocket scientists and engineers and people who are brilliant in technology, but they don't usually talk to people and they have to give presentations. It's one thing to do it yourself, but being able to look at other people and bring out the best in them and show them their own superpower. I find it exhilarating writing speeches about subjects I know absolutely nothing about. I don't write them. What I do is I pull them out of my clients. I will say I don't write speeches for people, but what I do is I ask them questions, pull the words out of their mouth, polish them up and put them back in and say, okay, say it now. So my ability at this point would be to take 35 years of experience and translate it so it's practical to someone who might be more of a novice.
Now this is interesting power I think would be good to aspire to, because at some point you increase your value when you're able to teach other people what you do well.
Sure.
So if someone wanted to learn more about developing this particular superpower as well, what advice would you give them?
Well, there's one question and the other we should really look at. So if one, how would they develop my superpower? How would they develop their superpower? So let's start with the actual question you asked me. How would they develop my superpower? Well, not easily. One question I am frequently asked, especially when I'm working people and they're more novices or they're professional speakers that want to make an enormous leap, and at speaker schools or coaching camps or working with teams, I let people know, please don't compare yourself to someone like me who has had a focused attention on how to become a better speaker for 35 years. You have to compare yourself to your own development. So one, how I develop my superpowers is, one, started, if you hit Dale Carnegie, Toastmasters, the way most people would. Went to the National Speakers Association. I haven't missed the National Speakers Association convention, I don't know, in 32, 33 years, ever since the first one. Since 1977, I've been at every NSA convention and a lot of workshops. So I'm learning from other people. I have hired and worked with, earlier in the day, superb speech coaches that had different strengths and different abilities. I've studied comedy writing. I've taken a lot of screenwriting classes, copywriting, marketing. Plus, I've been in sales. Plus, I have a good business sense. And I learn from brilliant people in different disciplines. And somehow, it all comes together. So for me, I love giving speeches. But with a speech, I know what I'm going to do. So 85% is going to come out as I plan. There's always room for flexibility and spontaneity. But there's a structure. There's a plan. I hold the high-level overview in a lot of detail. Now, when I am coaching someone, I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. And that, to me, is like living on the knife edge of now. And that is, to me, exhilarating, because someone who started as a hairdresser at 15, who coaches Fortune 500 presidents and executives and cleans up their grammar, unbelievable, says a lot about basic English education. That to me is exhilarating because I feel so competent. Now, let's look at how people. So mine has been a long journey, and maybe some people smarter than I am could absorb it faster. But you see, it gets to the point, I always encourage my clients or other speakers, you have to know your message so well you can forget, so you can focus on the audience. Now, with superpowers to simplify and demystify the process for other people, all I have to do is have the confidence that I've had 35 years of study, of focus in different disciplines that add to great speaking skills. You see, I take screenwriting classes, not to be a screenwriter, but Hollywood knows how to emotionally connect with an audience. A good speaker has to connect with an audience. So there are a lot of principles that you can learn to adapt. I just know when I am with a client or in a situation with a team or a sales team, I have such confidence that the right answer and the right coaching is going to be channeled with me. Because somehow or other, it's inside. Then the next question is, what advice would I give someone if they wanted to develop their own superpower to be a better speaker? Very simply. One, you have to understand what you do naturally well. Even if it's as simple as you understand yourself. And you have to understand it. And usually you're not going to do it yourself. It has to be from someone who knows more than you do. Because once you identify what you do well, you can put a name to it, a technique that you could teach to other people. And you can repeat it under stressful situations. For example, I've had to give speeches the day after both my parents died. Two, you have to identify what you do that is distracting from your message. And again, you have to have great perception skills, video record yourself and watch it, but usually you want that insight from other people. Three, you need to learn new techniques that you don't know. So you see, a novice might have great potential, but if they don't know how to structure a speech, if they don't know their options of how to open a presentation, if they don't know what makes a story emotionally compelling to an audience, they're not going to be as good, even if they're natural.
Right. They need that polish, the cutting of the diamond, so to speak.
Four, you absolutely have to learn from others who know more than you do. And then five, you need to teach what you know to somebody else. Because when you work at teaching what you know to others, it reinforces what you know. For example, I have been good at two things in my life, cutting hair and speaking. And perhaps now it's teaching other people. But if you take those two disciplines, and they all have a lot in common. I started both not with any specific great talent, but a personality that was conducive to it and an interest in and a commitment to work hard at it. Two, I learned from people a lot smarter, masters. And three, and this is what took it to a whole new level, started teaching other people. So that's how somebody who started work at 15 as a hairstylist in England, now in my maturity, have more demands for my time than I could possibly ever squeeze in, helping other execs and speakers and sales teams perfect their message. So if that is a superpower, great. But you don't develop your superpowers unless you have discipline. And my brother's company is called Discipline. And one of his frippicisms, I have it on T-shirts when I'm working hard, is discipline. Not an end in itself, but a means to an end. Back to you.
Well, it seems like the underlying message of everything you've been saying is the application of discipline in whatever it is you want to achieve. So if you want to be a better speaker, then you apply discipline to learning it, honing it, practicing it, making yourself better, the whole thing.
Yes.
Well, wonderful.
An artist, a musician, a singer, an actor, or even good with technology. I love when I meet great technical people. I would say, when you were a little boy or girl, were you always taking your mother's electrical appliances apart? And the answer usually is yes, because they had a vision of, let's see how it works. They had a curiosity, let's see how it works. Now let's see if I can put it back. And Laura said, yeah, I often had a few little extra parts we didn't quite know what to do with. But you see, it's in there. I had the great opportunity to be coaching Greg LeMond, three-time Tour de France winner, for a very high-fee speaking engagement with Microsoft. And as we were working, developing his presentation, and when I help people develop a speech which is around their life story, I always said, I do it like a movie. Here's the opening scene. Now let's go back. How did you get there? And he started cycling when he was 14. And I said, Greg, would it be true to say that when you got on a bike and you were cycling, it was almost a spiritual experience? He said, how did you know? I said, because it is always a spiritual experience when you find what you were destined to do.
Very true. Very true. And you know, another a piece of advice that you mentioned a little bit earlier in this conversation was about learning from other disciplines than the one that you're focused on. And this is something that I've always advised people. I mean, for example, I'm a writer, and I tend to write either nonfiction about business or science, or I write fiction, which is science fiction and fantasy and horror. But I read about how to write everything, regardless of genre, regardless of type, because I've found that the stuff I read about how to write nonfiction helps me with my fiction.
Of course.
The stuff I read about how to write fiction helps me with my nonfiction. Script writing helps me with my short stories because it's all about writing. And good writing is good writing regardless of what you're writing.
This is why studying comedy construction, even if you don't want to be a comedian, is helpful because you always want to be entertaining.
Very true.
And you understand the opening of a movie is called the flavor scene. Well, if you walk up and say, ladies and gentlemen, what a pleasure to be here. And when Mary first invited me, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice to go to Burbank? Who cares? That's not the flavor. Walk out and you create an experience. However you start your presentation, you are seducing people to put down their BlackBerries. And another of my friends who is a script consultant for Will Smith Company, he calls the opening of a movie the seduction scene, and that's it. You seduce people to suspend their disbelief. You seduce people into being there and accepting, to give up everything they're thinking about. Well, so's a good speech. Get your problems. Focus on this speech, this moment, what you're going to learn.
Right. The same thing's true of a novel. That's often why a novel will start somewhere in the middle of the story and then backtrack.
Yes.
It's because you need to plot people into the story, get them hooked so they'll continue to turn the page.
Well, this is what I tell audiences, and tell me if this would be true. I always say you can learn from Las Vegas entertainers because, one, they will start with their second best song and then close with the best song. Because, one, even though you bought your ticket and you want to go there, you're selling them on this concert. The last song sells them on coming back, very least buying the CD and DVD on the way out. And a writer, the first chapter sells this book, the last chapter sells the next one. Would you say that was true as a writer?
In many cases, definitely. Very true. And not only that, because the last chapter or the last bit of your speech or the last bit of your concert, usually the end that people remember the most powerfully.
Yes.
So it has to be your most powerful so that they'll remember it fondly.
Yes.
Well, wow, you've shared so much wonderful information with us today. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today, Patricia.
All right, thanks for the opportunity.
This is the end of today's episode of Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've kept the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on her picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.